news from the courts in New York. A New York judge upheld New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg's decision to evict Occupy Wall Street protesters from Zuccotti Park, or at least evict their tents. Yesterday, hundreds again gathered in the park, but this morning, as the rain falls here, it's quiet. No reports of any further arrests. So, what exactly is the fallout from yesterday's police action against the protesters? We're going to speak to Nicholas Kristof now, columnist for our partner, The New York Times. And Nick, you were with the protesters all day yesterday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, what was your sense of exactly what happened yesterday? How do we characterize that?
Well, I think that the city did indeed have some legitimate concerns about safety, about sanitation, but I thought that they ended up reacting in a really ham-handed way that underscored the protesters' own narrative. You know, they're out there because they feel marginalized, and boy, now they feel more marginalized before. And I think that, you know, ultimately the biggest threats that the Occupy Wall Street protesters faced were snow, rain, cold, and ultimately, at least for now, I think Mayor Bloomberg has re-energized them.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more, because you actually tweeted this yesterday. Could Bloomberg be a secret Occupy Wall Streeter? He seems to have just revived the movement. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that, you know, it was losing the idea of being out there was losing its novelty, especially as it got colder, as it got wetter. And also, you know, this whole strategy of occupying a little bit of ground, I think, was kind of running its course to some degree. A lot of local people in the area were really irritated. They were antagonizing people, maybe more than they were recruiting new ones. And yet, when Bloomberg did go in, and then, you know, first on Zuccotti Park and then nearby at Duarte Park, I think that it ends up, you know, recruiting more people to the cause and making them want to protest. The sense of billionaire mayor cracks down on protesters trying to create a more just society, I think it kind of fits into their narrative pretty well.
We're speaking with Nick Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times. And you've been writing not only about the Occupy Wall Street protests, but of course, you covered heavily the Arab Spring and especially the protests in Cairo, which inspired the Occupy Wall Street protests. And I'm wondering if that has informed you about where possibly this movement could go now. I mean, if they're not allowed to actually occupy 24/7 some of these public spaces around the country, what happens to move them forward?
Well, I mean, I think one of the lessons of the global protest movement is that you have to gather public attention, but you also have to be very careful about nurturing it and retaining it. And I think that some of the Occupy Wall Street movements in some locations were really at risk of losing that public sympathy because of this perception that they were really becoming, you know, centers of drugs and crime and noise and this kind of thing. So, in a sense, you could argue that they may have had a bit of a boost by getting a crackdown, just as they early on they got a boost by getting maced by the city police, for example. I think it's, you know, crucial that any of these movements have a cause that really resonates with the public. And in the case of Occupy Wall Street, I think the one that really resonates is income inequality. I came across a poll the other day that the public, and there's not much difference between Democrats and Republicans, they think that the top 20% of Americans should control about one-third of the nation's wealth. And in fact, the top 20% controls about 80%. So I think if they can push that issue with, you know, with street theater, with protests, with the kind of innovation and excitement that they have, that, you know, going into an election year is a pretty solid issue to push.
But at this point, Nick, I think it's fair to say that if they want their message to actually effect change, they have to push. I mean, they haven't actually, although they've gotten it to be part of the American conversation, this income equality, I don't think we can fairly say that they've achieved any real effective change. Do you think so?
Well, I do think that putting issues on the agenda is a huge step, is an important step. I think some labor unions think that the vote in Ohio to repeal the public bargaining rights law, that was attributable to some degree to the Occupy movement. But, in general, once you have an issue on the agenda, then you need to sustain the pressure, and you need to come up with specific remedies. And so I think that, I mean, from my point of view, I think it'd be quite useful if the Occupy movement were to think about specific steps that they'd like to endorse. And that tends to be a lot less glamorous, you know, sort of close the carried interest loophole. It doesn't have the ring to it that one might, but that would be a hugely important step, I think.
Well, we're speaking with Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times, who's written extensively about the protests here in the United States and protests around the world. So let's look at this globally for just a second. Is there any particular guidance that the Occupy Wall Streeters could take at this point that would tell them where they might go? I mean, maybe the Tea Party is a good example for them in terms of turning a movement, a protest, into political power.
In the case of Occupy Wall Street, I don't think that'll happen. I think it won't happen partly because a lot of people think that the Tea Party kind of lost its lost itself when it moved into the Republican Party, but also there's such suspicion in the Occupy movement toward the Democratic Party in a sense that the Democratic Party betrayed them. So I think that while the Democrats may try to co-opt the Occupy movement, I think they're unlikely to be successful.
And there's another issue, Nick, which you as journalists know, which is that if they're not actually occupying a space, that's less dramatic footage, right, for TV cameras, I mean, to a certain extent.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that has really helped the Occupy movement all along has been this sense that the authorities are cracking down on them. You know, it was that first bit of pepper spraying that really gave them the huge boost they needed, and then you had the Occupy Oakland getting cracked down on. And so they've been sort of nurtured at every point by these police crackdowns. And so the question is kind of whether they can continue through protests and just the kind of imaginative approach that they took to get the spotlight. I think that, you know, that there is some hope. There are some ways of doing that. You know, I remember in that maybe 2004 campaign, there were these billionaires for Bush sort of comedy protests that followed the president around. I think that there are ways that they can continue to maintain that narrative.
Well, they have moved back into Zuccotti Park without their tents. We'll see if they end up occupying without any tarps. That's Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times, talking about the Occupy Wall Street movement. Thanks so much, Nick.
Sure, my pleasure.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.